Hi, everyone, and welcome to our podcast, Let's Get Real. I am delighted to be sitting with Robert Bell this morning, one part taste supplier, and taste supplier across the hotel group. And he's fourth generation owner-operator for Ireland's oldest independent tea blenders and coffee roasters, which began in 1887. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning. Nice to see you.
Me too.
Thanks for coming to talk to us.
Absolutely delighted. So, Robert, fourth generation, 1887, the company has been through a lot, seen a lot, developed a lot. Do you want to tell us a bit about the history, how it started and how you got to four generations in a family business?
Gosh, well, how long have you got? I'll try and keep it as brisk as I can. Way back in 87, so if you imagine, Belfast was a really burgeoning city. It was a very exciting place to be. There was all the shipbuilding going on, and it was the biggest shipbuilding yard in the world and all that sort of stuff. Very vibrant place. At that time, my great-grandfather, a gentleman called Samuel David Bell, he was a Stuartstown man from County Tyrone and a farmer's boy, and he wanted to join the church. He came up to Belfast, and in order to finance his studies in the theological college, he got a job with a pair of grocers in the centre of Belfast called Dunwoody and Blakely. At the time, he also happened to fall in love with a young lady whose father was a very wealthy linen merchant called McCausland. Her name was Jeannie McCausland, and they fell in love and they got married. And the father-in-law, in order to keep Samuel, he enabled Samuel to buy out the two old grocers. And so S.D. Bell and Company, as a sole trader, was founded. And they were just grocers and general merchanting and sort of hardware and that sort of thing, close to the centre of town on Elm Street and or corner of Elm Street and Church Lane.
Wow.
So very close to the Albert
Right Rock. In the centre, yeah.
So right in the centre of town. And things went very, very quickly. As I said, Belfast was booming. And he presumably had a pretty golden touch in terms of what he was doing commercially. And so he decided, although his faith was very important to him, but he decided not to join the church. He decided that he would keep his beloved Jeannie in the spirit that she was accustomed to and build a business. And that's what he did. And he got contracts for supplying ships and other big businesses in the town, primarily with tea and coffee. That's then where the focus then went into was those two products. And the tea and coffee have been equal partners in the business really ever since. And then his son, Robert Bell, he was also Robert. He was Samuel Robert, but they called him Bob. And he came back from the First World War and joined the firm at that point. And the company then was sort of incorporated in 1926 as a limited company at that point. They were based in Belfast, and in the First World War, they did quite well, actually, supplying ships and that sort of thing. Up to the Second World War, things were much, much harder because Admiralty contracts didn't really exist. And basically, there was rationing and things were really, really tough. And you could only really buy what you were able to sell to the families that were on your books. That's the way rationing worked. And so business was very tough in those years. Then post-war years, things then boomed in Belfast again after rationing finished about 1956 or so. Within about, 10 or 15 years, then troubles made life in Belfast much harder. By that time, my father had started to get involved. Bob Bell died in 1956 and my father got involved. He left Queens early. He wanted to be a farmer. In fact, didn't really want to join the firm, but he did because family expected that to happen, really. And he and his brother were in the firm. But it was very, very tough in those years too. After the boom years after the war, Second World War, things then got very, very hard in Belfast. And so we moved out of our premises in the centre of town. And we already had a shop at the busy junction of the Upper Newton Ards Road and the Outer Ring. And we basically hunkered down and held on to what we could here and survived those difficult years. We opened up a little cafe on the premises. We just put a couple of seats in the window of this shop where we were selling tea and coffee dry, as it were. And put people in and served sausage rolls and cups of coffee and tea and soup and sandwiches and that sort of thing. And over the years, it's expanded from what was basically 6 seats to now about 110.
Yeah, so we're spending and it's very, very busy.
It's a busy place. Yeah, I call it the They call it the East Belfast Stock Exchange. It's a sort of busy wee place.
Wow.
And lots of business folk come in, and young mums and older generations folk will come in. People on the school run, business people who are meeting each other off airplanes and that sort of thing. We're close to the city airport, and it's a kind of hub and a very busy wee place. And all this time, while we've got this sort of catering business going on, we also then would supply to other hotels and restaurants and shops and delicatessens around Ireland, and principally in the north of Ireland, and nice customers like the McKeever family, whose hotels we supply tea to. So it's been an interesting evolution. I'll tell a quick story that when we were 125 years old back in 2012, and we launched a book that told the story of the firm and also about tea and coffee. And we did this launch, and there was a journalist there who was quite a challenging guy, actually. And he asked me the question. He said, if you're 125 years old, why aren't you bigger than Starbucks? And I thought this was quite an angry question, quite a difficult question to answer. Yeah. But I then went back into the history, and I described how the business had ebbed and flowed over those generations. And there were times when things were really, really good, and we just couldn't fail to succeed. It was just really, really booming. But there were other times when, through family bereavement and death, and also through troubles and wartime and civil unrest, that the business would just have successive, almost nervous breakdowns, and would almost die, but not quite.
Yes.
And then would pick itself up and grow again. So if you looked at the size of the business and its success over those 125 years, now 134 years, there have been periods of significant growth, but also significant shrinkage, and the business would just reinvent itself and come back again, doing something similar but different in order to survive for the next generation, really.
Yeah, it's really interesting, like you're saying, that over the last 134 years, you know, the ebbs and flows of the business, because obviously we're entering such a challenging time in business again. We've just come out of the global pandemic and different things like that. Does it give you a bit of comfort knowing that the business has came through all those previous things, or do you see that we're pressure going fourth generation? I need to keep that out this way.
That's a really good question. So yes, absolutely. When the lockdown happened literally 2 years ago, and I must admit it was quite a depressing time. I was a bit upset until government help came along and made sure that we could survive. But there was a bit of a responsibility I did feel on my shoulders that felt, gosh, this business is literally just going to disappear. But it didn't. And it didn't for a number of reasons. A, yes, there was government help, but also we decided to let's grow areas of the business that haven't been growing particularly much before that. The internet side of the business went really crazy and has still, although it's reduced back down since the shop reopened, it's still reduced, but down to a much higher level than it had been. So fundamentally, that part of the business is far more important now than it was 2 years ago. So that's an evolution that, in a sense, the pandemic has helped, because it's given us yet another really good string to our bow. And it's quite a profitable side of the business because it's not very labor intensive. And we add quite a lot of value to the products as we blend our tea and as we roast our coffee. That's where you can add a lot of value to create the flavors that people are prepared to pay for. So those shocks, I must admit, when I thought to myself, this is going to be horrible, this pandemic. And of course it has been. But I then sort of picked myself up and thought, look, we did two world wars here.
Yeah.
And we've done inflation and interest rates at 20% before now. And we managed to survive those two. And I think with a business, if you have the agility to reform and close ranks and say, okay, now what are we going to do? And we don't have external shareholders chirping away saying, what about my dividend? Why can't I do this? Why can't we do that? Why don't you do the other thing? We can be quite agile in changing direction and doing new things and spotting opportunities when they come. And we've definitely done that this time around too. So we're back in a growth phase, having shrunk for a couple of years, and the future is looking pretty good.
Right. Well, it's certainly sounding good in the background here. Absolutely. But that is one of the things with family businesses, isn't it? That you can turn on a dime. You don't have to wait for decisions to be made from some sort of corporate head office floating somewhere else. And I know from our point of view, when we first spoke, I think it was at St. George's Market, actually, started chatting. And when we said about the hotels and supply and different things like that, you were like, I will put it in the back of my car and I will drive out your delivery to you. It's no problem. And I think that's the thing about family business, isn't it? You go above and beyond.
You do.
Probably like a more corporate setting because you can and it's important to you.
Well, sometimes because you have to, but often because you can. And actually, one of the best parts of my day would be actually putting some product in the back of the van or even in the back of the car, just going and seeing customers. And it takes you away from when the staff are revolting or whatever. You can don't quote me on that. Oh dear, we're on a podcast. But sometimes it's just nice to get out and see how your customers are performing, what else they need from us, and just even to clear your head. And so I'm absolutely, sometimes it's a matter of rolling your sleeves up and going and doing it because you have to.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's just a pleasure to go out and see customers and try to see the world through their lenses and in their shoes rather than just from what we're doing. And it's nice in a way to have a business where not only are we producing the product for those customers, but we also understand what catering is all about, what hospitality means, and how many moving parts you have in a hospitality business. And keeping those plates spinning is difficult. And I know I have an idea what it's like to run a hotel. Certainly running a busy restaurant is hard enough.
Customers come and then they stay over as well.
Well, indeed. Yeah, you can't get rid of them.
But they're there for at least 24 hours.
I'm sure you're thrilled and you're upset when they leave. I'm sure you are. But yes, there are a lot of moving parts. And often, of course, our customers, yours and mine, often don't see what goes on in the background. They necessarily have an understanding of just how difficult it can be to put hot food on a table on demand.
How many people are involved in that process of you coming, getting your table, getting your drinks, getting your food. There's multiple people involved in that.
And even the sheer number of suppliers that we can find ourselves having. And we have probably more suppliers than we would like to have. And some of those supplying relationships are easy to deal with and some are less so. And so even that sheer complexity of a small business can be difficult to manage. But I find, and one of the reasons, Brigitte, when you came and spoke to us, I was so pleased to talk to you, was because you're a kind of company that we've got a similar sort of DNA. We think along similar lines. Often you do have to deal with big corporates when you're buying product. Of course we do. But it's nice to be dealing with companies that think along the same lines and have similar timelines and similar pressures, that we can sort of have a corporate hug and agree how painful things
can be. Therapy session.
A bit of mutual therapy, exactly right.
Absolutely. So, Robert, obviously, you guys, 134 years, you're experts now in tea and coffee. And I suppose a very dividing question is, what makes the perfect cuppa? Is it like milk first, milk after, no milk, controversial, in your opinion?
Do you know, there are short answers to this question, there are longer answers. Forget me to give a slightly longer one.
Absolutely. So
tea and coffee both are grown all over the world. Not every country in the world, but throughout the world. But they're drunk everywhere. Every nation on earth drinks tea and or coffee. And yet they prepare it quite differently. And we in this part of the world have been drinking tea for a lot less long than the Chinese or the Indians or goodness knows however many people who've been drinking tea for longer than we have. And so it's a little bit perhaps misplaced for us to assume that we are the experts in how these products should be enjoyed. If you go to India and you're in someone's home drinking a cup of tea, they will probably make it with milk, often condensed milk, or they will boil the tea leaves in milk with cardamom and ginger and make a kind of chai, they call it. And then they will filter that so that you're just pouring this hot, sweet drink, because when you warm milk, of course, the lactose in it becomes sugar and it makes the drink more sweet. That's why hot milk is sweeter than filled milk. And so it's a delicious drink. But to say to me, what's the right way to make a cup of tea is I don't know, it's a bit like asking a baker what's the right way to make bread when bread is made all over the world in very different ways too. So, but the other thing I would probably say is what people do in the privacy of their own home is absolutely up to them. And I guess If you want to put the milk in second, that's fine. Technically, milk should go in first. That's at a scientific level. Milk is actually what they call a colloid. It's a substance which a chemist will confirm to you is relatively easily separated, basically water and cream. And you'll see that separation happening if you introduce milk into a hot substance like hot black tea. You see that happening. Now, it's not vital that milk goes in first, but the separation doesn't happen if you put the milk, if you put the tea into the milk, whereas it does happen if you put the milk into the tea. So if that's important to you, then put the milk in first. And certainly if you've got a teapot, then you can do that. But if all you're doing, and it's perfectly legitimate, if all you're doing is putting a tea bag in a cup or a mug and introducing hot water into that, and then diluting it with a bit of milk to cool it down or to change the flavor, then that's absolutely fine. And I wouldn't die in a ditch to argue for that. But if you want perfection, you should have a nice silver or hot teapot, and you should introduce your milk if you want milk first, and then the tea. But perfection is a sort of, tea is more about the enjoyment of the ambience that you're in, the comfort of your chair, the company that you're keeping. It would be wonderful to have a cucumber sandwich and a string orchestra in the corner. But actually, the best cup of tea of the day might well be at the top of Slieve Donard or in the Janet's Causeway out of a flask.
Or might be able to get the kids to bed.
Exactly. And so really, it's the kicking off of the shoes, perhaps, and putting your feet up is more important than the taste of the tea. It's more about the occasion that you're experiencing. And the absence of a string orchestra or a cucumber sandwich doesn't mean that you should be the experience is a more holistic one than just whether you put your milk in first or second.
So I think one thing we can agree on is whether milk's in first or last. A nice packet of SDL tea is the best.
Well,
perfection.
I couldn't agree with you more there.
Absolutely.
I'm thrilled to supply McKeever's with tea in your bedrooms and in your catering of facilities. And the relationship we have with McKeever's has been first class for as long as we've been buying our tea for, gosh, a decade and a whole.
Yes.
And long way that continued.
Oh, it will, absolutely. So looking to the future then, Robert, Fifth Generation, are they interested? Are they?
That's another tough one. Well, we have a bit of a policy in the firm that we keep ownership and shareholding within the firm very tight, only to the working directors. So there is no chipping in from the sidelines of people who aren't actually active in the company. That's one principle which is absolutely enshrined. The other thing that we do try to ensure is that if people do want to get involved, they've got to go do something else first.
Yeah.
So nobody is just leaving school and going straight into the firm. Go out, get a degree, find more interests, enjoy yourself, because working in a family business can be really hard. And once you're in, it's very hard to leave.
Yes.
And so you need to have really made your mind up that that's what you want to do before you start getting involved. Because if you then leave, that's going to cause all sorts of family tension or whatever. And also, you're not going to make a million doing it. So do enjoy life and get some experience out there before you would then come back into the firm. And bring some experience back when you do. That's the crucial thing. But I think if family businesses are too introspective and only employ people that teaching them the things that they already know, that's not as useful a thing to do as to say, go out and get some experience.
Yes.
Now, having said that, I have three daughters, all of whom are in further education. One is going to be a doctor, the other a civil engineer, and the other a physiotherapist. And I think every family should have a physiotherapist in their
house. Absolutely.
So I'm very keen to sponsor all of that. But who knows? Sooner or later, someone will come back and say, I want to get involved. And if they've got something to contribute, then they're more than welcome. But I don't tend to think too long and hard about it at the moment. I'm still under 60 and I've got a lot of years in me yet.
Absolutely.
And we have a strong team of non-family members who are just very, very engaged and are very productive and very knowledgeable. And I think for others to come back in the family, they would need to bring some knowledge and some commitment back with them, because otherwise with family businesses, you need to, if family come back in who aren't contributing, in a valuable way that's, oh, again, not fair on the existing employees who may be working very, very hard. So I think there needs to be value being added by the family in order to make that happen.
Absolutely.
So it's not something I think about every day, but I do think about it probably every week. It's something that's
Scheduled on your weekly planner.
It's not far from our thinking, but it's not an urgent problem I need to solve. An urgent problem is general recruitment and the price of milk and tea and packaging and everything else. Those are far more immediate problems that we try to negotiate these days. But we will. We've had shocks before and we've survived them, and we'll keep survive. We'll survive this one.
Great. And you are keen on growth again and starting to move forward. And any new product developments coming down the line?
Yeah, we've had a few. Exactly. We've got coffee bags, which you could put in bedrooms. We've got new capsules. We do Nespresso capsules for that sort of process as well. We've got new tea flavors coming out. We've got tea packing facility. We've got compostable, fully compostable tea bags. So those go directly in your bin. So all the plastic has been taken out of our tea packaging. We've got all sorts of other things that are on the agenda to keep our customers interested in buying more.
Brilliant. Well, we as McKeever Hotel Group will keep supporting you because you do a phenomenal job and your tea is just loved throughout the building. We have so many different varieties and flavours, and I tell you, every single one of them is great. We're very proud to work with an only family business. We like keeping it local and, like you say, having the same ethos. And for anybody who wants to come and try for themselves, you obviously come to the hotels, but you can also come to the lovely cafe here, Aubernian Arch Road, online if you want to purchase if you're further away, or St George's Market where I first met you.
Absolutely. I will send them from here up to you to stay the night.
Brilliant. That's great. A partnership working.
All right.
Thanks very much, Robert.
Thank you.
Yes. See you again soon.